Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So as we begin to head towards the new year, some of us might be thinking about setting some goals. Whether we keep them or not, many people make New Year's resolutions, right? So now we'll start a short pre-New Year series on books that might help with some of that resolve. You can say they fall into the self-help genre, but they're not just any self-help books. We've selected some of the most iconic, best-selling books that have transcended the category and become a part of the culture and the way we talk about ourselves, and that seem to be getting revived on social media and elsewhere for a new generation. Later in the set, for example, we'll have Julia Cameron, who wrote the classic The Artist's Way. Right now, we take a closer read of Attached, the new science of adult attachment and how it can help you find and keep love. Now, this was published all the way back in December 2010, but the book has been translated into 20 languages since then and continues to be in Amazon's top 200 books. According to the New York Times, it is the rare book that sells an increasing number of copies year to year since its release, from selling 62,000 hard copies in 2019, over 82,000 copies in 2020, to 102,300 copies as of October of this year. So joining me now to discuss his book and why it continues to be so popular for people who are dating is the co-author of Attached, Dr. Amir Levine, MD, adult child and adolescent psychiatrist and neuroscientist conducting neuroscience research at Columbia University. Dr. Levine, thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And listeners, we bet there are a lot of fans of this book out there. You want to call in and share what you learned from Attached and how you've applied it to your romantic relationships, or if you have any questions for Dr. Amir Levine, but, you know, never had him over for dinner after you read the book, tweet at Brian Lehrer or give us a call now at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. So I see the idea for this book came from your time at the therapeutic nursery at Columbia, where you were studying children's bonds with their caregivers. So what was the moment in which you realized that adults could benefit from this research too?
You know, it was one of the most really interesting rotation that I had to do. And it was so powerful, the therapy between the mothers and the child. And usually we treated mothers with post-traumatic stress disorders, which really kept them having made it difficult for them to interact securely with their children. And we taught them and changed some of the dynamics between the child and the parent and helped them become more secure. It was so powerful and it was so interesting that it made me do something that you hardly ever do in those rotations. You know, in the beginning, you get this really long reading list and no one has time to read it all. But I went and I read all of it. And in it, I found that there's another whole other field of adult attachment, and that adults also have different attachment styles and interact in close relationships in accordance to some of these principles. And at the time, I went through my own breakup and I really experienced it as a revelation. It was so eye-opening and it really helped me understand in a very different way all the different dynamics that went down in that relationship and really helped me overcome some of the difficulties and some of the pain that I experienced during that breakup.
So the building blocks here are that just like researchers see in children, adults have three attachment styles that you identify. And I'm sure there are many more, and you did this to make it relatable. It's sort of a big three. According to the book, they are anxious, avoidant, and secure. So let's take each of them briefly. Anxious attachment. How would someone know if they fall into that category, and how does it generally affect their relationships?
So I think it's helpful to initially you have to understand that it all has to do with how much we crave intimacy and closeness. So and that's on one hand. But then on the other hand, how much do we have, how sensitive we are to potential threat in the relationship? So if we, because in a way, if you think about actually relationships, it's one of the main ways for us to feel safe in the world. People think, oh, if I have a lot of money in the bank, or if I have a lot of real estate, or different monetary issues will make us feel safer. But for our emotional brain or social brain, all those things didn't exist when our brain evolved. And the one thing that makes us really feel safe, the safest, is our relationships. So if we love intimacy and closeness, but we don't have a very sensitive radar, so we don't really notice a lot of potential threats in relationships or dangers, that means that we have a secure attachment style. If we really love closeness, but we're very sensitive, we have a very sensitive radar, and we can really identify a threat a mile away. Sometimes we're right, sometimes we're not exactly right, but oftentimes we are. Then that makes us have more of an anxious attachment style or working model. Some people call it that. And that means that we're just more, and when I talk about threat in a relationship, is anything that stands in the way of the availability of your partner. So anything that sort of cuts the connection, or that you perceive connection. And the last one is the avoidant attachment style. And by the way, there's also a fourth one, a mix between anxious and avoidant. It's more rare, and we can talk about that if we have time. But the avoidant attachment style, it's more when people, they want to also attach, because we're all, attachment is a basic need, just as much as food and water. So we want to attach, but they don't feel comfortable with too much closeness. So when they become close to the other person, they use what we call deactivating strategies, all sorts of little ways to create more distance in their relationship. And that's the avoidant attachment style.
So you use anecdotes, and I'm going to ask you to tell us one interesting story to discuss different types of attachments. In one of them, you have an anxious attachment person in a relationship with an avoidant attachment person. So your friend Tamara starts dating a guy named Greg, who initially promises Tamara that he wants to spend a lot of time with her, but that quickly doesn't become the case. She becomes all anxious, and we can read this and say, God, that Greg is a pretty big jerk. But according to the book, he's actually avoidant. So you want to talk about that interaction?
Yeah, so that's where I think part of what also helped me, and I think also is helping other people in understanding, because it's really this whole book invites you to learn a whole new terminology about relationships, a science-based terminology. And so instead of just saying a jerk, it gives you a much more specific and precise idea about why people behave the way they behave, and also gives you an opportunity to intervene differently, to potentially make things better. So for example, with Tamara and Greg, Tamara had an anxious working model or anxious attachment style, and he was avoidant. So the problem for people that are avoidant is once there's too much closeness, it scares them, they feel uncomfortable, and they withdraw. But as I told you before, that the withdrawal, that feeling that the person may not be as available, that triggers what we call, it's like this a danger sign. It's like your radar system gets triggered, and then that makes you try to reach out and reinstate that availability through many different means. So you get activated, basically. You see, there's a specific lingo that goes along with it. You get activated, and then you engage in protest behavior. You call more. You do all sorts of things. We see it a lot in children. It's much easier to see the attachment behavior in children. Like, they will do anything to get the mother's or the father's attention. And it's very similar here. You're just going to engage in behavior trying to get their attention. But for someone avoidant, it's exactly, you're playing on their biggest fears. Like, oh my God, this person is now encroaching on my independence.
Space.
They're getting, yes. Yeah, exactly.
You just used the term, one of the terms from the book, protest behavior, where somebody calling somebody they're in a relationship can be called protest behavior. Can you explain that a little more?
Yeah, so protest behavior is any behavior that will reinstate the availability of your partner. So it's like, that's why I say it's so easy to look and see it in kids. What happens if a child doesn't get their father's or mother's attention? They will start yelling, screaming, shrieking. Maybe they'll try something nice, give them a present, anything in their repertoire to get the attention of the other person. And that, so protest behavior is a result of an activation. But in truth, as I told you, it's like a surveillance system in our brain that kind of like knows where all of our loved ones are. And usually when I give talks, I kind of like do this exercise, which I don't really like doing because it's a little bit unsettling. But I'm going to tell you also now, like even all of us now have in our brain, we know kind of an idea of where our loved ones are and that they're pretty much okay, hopefully. And if they're not okay, we know where they are and why they're not okay. But if I were to tell you now that where your loved ones are, there was a terrible earthquake or a terrorist attack or something horrible, it'll be hard for you to continue this interview. You'll really want to just stop everything and make sure that they're okay. So that we have that thing in the background all the time, all of us. It's just that for people with an anxious working model, their radar trips much more quickly and more easily.
That something's wrong. Listeners, my guest, and who has a question for Dr. Amir Levine, co-author of the book Attached, The New Science of Adult Attachment and How It Can Help You Find and Keep Love, which remarkably is selling more and more copies as it closes in on its 11th year in print, and it's become a TikTok sensation, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But who's read it and has a question, who hasn't read it and has a question just based on what you've been hearing, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. And Lauren in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Dr. Amir Levine. Hi, Lauren.
Hey, Brian. I'm a big fan. I actually mention you on my dating profile. My fandom gets a lot of attention from other Brian Lehrer fans.
Wow.
Anyway, Dr. Levine, I've read your book, and I'm often recommending it to friends. One thing that comes up with young women and men and other identifying people that I am friends with and in the dating world is the awkward dance of text messaging. And I find that like a lot of the attachment styles very applicable to some of the complaints that people have about the type of communication that happens over text messaging. So I'm just wondering what your opinion is on this kind of like modern way of communicating and dating and getting to know someone and how the attachment styles play into it.
I think that's a great question. The way that I see it, if you think about that surveillance system, so we all have a certain way. We all have, basically, it's called an attachment system. And we create a baseline. We all have a different baseline with different people. There are people that we text each day. There are people that will text us once a week. But once that baseline is established, if they do something different, well, let's say all of a sudden they stop texting. They're only texting us once a week after they've texted us each day. That will sort of sound the alarm, right? So in the beginning of dating, there's no baseline established. But part of what I teach my patients and in treatment is to try to very early on establish a baseline that they feel comfortable with and see if their partner in dating is able to listen to their needs and kind of like follow suit and see if they can get along, because that's a very early way to test if it's a good match, for example. So we can actually use texting as a way to sort of sift and through and really try to ascertain whether the person that you're dating is actually a good match or not.
Lauren, I hope that's helpful. And, you know, if you're mentioning this show in your profile, no wonder you can't get a date. No, I'm kidding.
But, plenty of dates, especially from Brian Lehrer fans.
That's great. I'll have to plant some malware in your phone and hear what you're all saying about me. Lauren, thank you very, very much. Anna in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Dr. Levine. Hi, Anna.
Hi. I'm so excited to finally be talking to you. So my question is, in terms of my dating experience, and I guess, you know, maybe specifically to hetero dating, a lot of my friends, it just seems like, in general, men have more of an avoidance attachment than women. I'm just curious as to if there's any insight into that, or if that's just like my perception, maybe.
Yeah, and Dr. Levine, this would go with sort of the classic stereotype that may even be true, that, you know, women seek commitment much more and men avoid commitment much more.
Right. And I think the answer has a few levels. I mean, one is that the truth of the matter is that I think the majority of people are actually secure, both men and women. And I find that very, very comforting and promising, because there's a lot of people out there that are very capable of being in really, really good relationships. And in the process of writing the book back then, and now I'm writing another book about the secures of this world and how you can become more secure. I've really learned to fall in love with all the secures in this world, because they really have an innate talent of being really good in a relationship. And by the way, it's not only in humans, it's in other animals too. There is this tendency of some individuals within a species of excelling in relationships. So that's one thing. The other thing is, it's true that there are many men that have avoidant attachment style, but there are also men that have anxious attachment style. And but in general, one of the challenges of dating is that there tends to be avoidance tend to recirculate back into the dating world much faster than I think secures and anxious. And I'll tell you why, because what happens is when people are secure, they often find themselves very easily and very quickly in relationships, and they tend to stay in those relationships for a long time. For people that are anxious, they sometimes have more tumultuous relationships, especially that combination between anxious and avoidant can be tumultuous. And so, but once they break up with someone, they still tend to think about them a long time. They miss them. They blame themselves. So oftentimes it takes them a long, long time to be able to sort of get back into the dating and be able to put the other person behind them. For people who are avoidant, it's really remarkable. I remember I had one, they really circulate very quickly back into the dating pool. I remember one avoidant patient, he was a man actually, but there are also, I've sort of encountered many avoidant women who, I remember the position between him and another patient who couldn't stop thinking about the other person that they've broken up with. And this person, they broke up a week earlier, and he said, well, I asked him, do you think about this person that you broke up with? And he said, well, no, I was thinking about him today. It's a week later, because I'm going on another date. And I was thinking, should I really wear this shirt that he gave me as a present? It's just like, that's the level of how much they think about the other person. Right. They can put people behind them rather quickly.
So can people change their attachment style? I mean, if we're talking about this book, I mean, and you're a, you know, PhD an MD psychiatrist. But if we're talking about this in the context of a self-help genre, can people use an understanding of their attachment styles that they might get from your book to change it to something that might be more productive for themselves?
I mean, absolutely, yes. And that's why, actually, I really also love this whole area of research and work, which we transform into clinical work, because people change their attachment styles all the time. There was a study that came out in 2020 that showed that just knowing about the attachment styles and the secure attachment styles helps people become more secure. And there's something that's called secure priming. You can become more secure if you can do secure priming. And part of a lot of the work that I've done since the book came out is figuring out a way of how people can become more secure and using different methods in helping people become more secure.
Yeah. One more caller in here before we run out of time. Alexis in Red Bank, you're on WNYC. Hi, Alexis, and sorry to say we have about 30 seconds for you.
Okie dokie. So I learned about attachment theory in graduate school. I believe it was first talked about with Bowlby and Ainsworth. And the study was with moms walking out of a room, and they would see how the child reacted, if the child cried, if the child continued to play with toys, and then how the child reacted to the mom. And I kind of poo-pooed it. I went on to subsequently get divorced, and now I'm single again. And it is amazing how important this theory has become in realizing who I am and who a good mate will be. And I do find that I think I move between anxious and avoidant, depending upon who the person in my life is. But it is really the first step in understanding yourself and knowing who to choose so that you can have a happy future. And even in analyzing why I became divorced. So interesting.
So interesting, Alexis. Thank you. You can use that as a blurb for the next edition of your book, Dr. Levine. In our last minute, in addition to the higher book sales year over year since it came out in 2010, it's a hit on TikTok. Currently, the stats I'm seeing, there are over 214 million views attributed to hashtag attachment style and 75 million views attributed to hashtag attachment theory. Is it different to have people come to you through social media than through bookstores? And we have 30 seconds.
I think the part of the why it's become such a hit, I've been thinking about that because to me it's a little bit surprising. But I think rather more so than a self-help book, I think about it more as a science help book. I mean, I'm a scientist, not just a physician. And to me, it's as if, and that's how I experienced it. And I'm glad we were able to sort of convey it in the book. It's like all of a sudden feeling, why am I having such a hard jumping? Why am I having such a hard walking? And then all of a sudden someone tells you, well, there's gravity. And you understand, oh, okay, so that's why. And now I can learn to live with it.
That has to be the last word from Dr. Amir Levine, whose book Attached, The New Science of Adult Attachment and How It Can Help You Find and Keep Love, just keeps selling and selling. Thanks so much.
Thank you.